Are we all suitably caffeinated? Yes, well done for arriving at 9 a.m. on a Thursday morning. That's fairly impressive. Now, I'm glad you came. Do you have 5 minutes to talk about our Lord and Saviour DNS security? Yeah? No, I'm not that kind of presenter. Please raise your hand if you've seen me speak before. I'm really sorry. We're going to do it again. I don't know what that says, whether it says more about me or you. But my name is Laura. I run a small feral security startup called SafeStack. You've probably never heard of us, but you will by the end of today, because at least a few of you are going to come and track me down for one of these. The most coveted sticker here today. Not only does it have ninjas, but it has unicorns. At least 3 out of 5 developers have said, looks about as cute as GitHub stickers. So there you go. That's your bribery to get involved, to participate, because I really hate lecturing. I'm going to ask you questions. I am a bit of a jerk. So, how many of you work for a company who unironically have said we are going to disrupt something in the last 12 months? Yep, absolutely. Are you, any of you in blue sky rooms? Any of you green fields? No? Yes? There's at least one unicorn in the room, I'm sure of it. But the problem is, the world is a terrible place, right? How many of you went to Kirk and Andy's magic show 2 days ago? Yeah? Absolutely. Fantastic, right? I don't present like that. But it's a good example of why we're kind of screwed. The world is a terrible place. The internet is a festering, toxic wasteland, and we put our code willingly into it. How many of you write code, or at least try to? Yep. How many of you have code on the internet you wish would just disappear quietly into the night? Yep, absolutely. That's what we trust our banking systems, our telcos, our health systems. They are made up of code that at least someone on the planet wishes would disappear, that a grown-up would come along and rewrite it, maybe in a modern framework, maybe without that little bit of to-do that says, don't touch this, dragons live here. All the kittens on the internet are sad, we know this. That or they're chasing around after lasers. And somebody wants to do bad things to your computer. And in fact, Kirk and Andy did a lovely job in telling us how exactly that was going to happen. Wonderful, great. I don't even need to cover that part. This is what the world looks like. We've been told this is what the world looks like because cyber is coming to get us. How many of you are buying things for cyber these days? Yeah? Sells good. If you're an insurance company right now, you just basically say cyber, 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 enough, and they come to you. It's like the Pied Piper. This is actually just rubbish JavaScript. How many of you have ever written rubbish JavaScript? That's anyone in the room who's written JavaScript, by the way. This isn't what the world looks like. There isn't some kind of cyber world that you can suddenly control and understand and reason with. There's no superheroes here. The situation is beyond hope, right? What are we going to do? I'm actually a weird type of security person. I'm a naive optimist, as well as being kind of scary sometimes. I think we can do better. I think we can protect ourselves and we can build awesome things really fast. I love the idea that we're doing self-driving cars, that we've got computer systems that can diagnose cancers more effectively and more consistently than humans can. I'm really excited about this, but I'm terrified of the security of it. Because how many of you would want to be the security person on that team going, yeah, it's certainly safe, absolutely. There is not enough money in the world. Doing this securely is going to be hard, really hard. How many of you do security day to day? I know at least a couple of you are security people, so I'm going to pick you out of the crowd if you get like rambunctious. How many of you know you should, but it's on the list with performance scaling and watching YouTube videos? Yeah? Most of you. Now, if any of you haven't met me before and think this is going to be one of those talks where I tell us we're all friends together and we should like play really nicely and the world will get better because we'll all try hard and form a working group, then I'm really sorry, kind of, because I'm not that kind of presenter. I'm here to tell you today to harden up. I'm here to tell you to not cry about this. Nobody's going to swoop in. There is no Batman. There is no magical security unicorn that is going to help you here. the only person who can help you and your organization get security actually happening is you. Your development team, your engineers, anyone in your organization who cares that they have a job tomorrow. Now, this is a really weird line for someone who sells security services. I genuinely want to be redundant one day. Please let that be a thing. I want you, by the end of this, to have at least three things you can take back to your team and get on with so that you can start preventing attacks, detecting when they happen, and then responding to them, because I'm going to break it to you, going, we've never been hacked, normally means you've never looked. And that's not the same thing. So how are we going to become these amateur superheroes? How are we going to go on our little origin journey? Well, we're going to learn five things. We are going to learn how to accept a few truths we need to accept. We're going to protect ourselves. We are going to watch for signs of trouble. We are going to respond to them. And then most of all, most importantly of all, we are going to learn lessons and keep getting better. Because the secret of security is there is no finished. There is no done. You never stop learning. So let's get on with it. Let's get to some of these things that you should be doing. And some of these you're going to sit there and go, I totally do this already, and that's great. If you're the person sat there going, I already do this, I feel really smug and happy at 9 a.m. on a Thursday, that's fantastic. You get a new job, more homework. Your job is to become me, but for your organization, to be the evangelist, to be the support person, the guild leader, whatever culture your company has caught at this point in time, you're going to stand up, wear your little crown, and you're going to help others. So what do we need to accept? This is us when we're coding, right? How many of you coded anything this week? Even though you're at a conference, you're like, oh, I can't help it. Just need to build a thing. Yep, I wrote really bad Python this week. That's what I do. I write really terrible Python that everyone would be ashamed of seeing. But when we're in that moment, when we're pushing forward and building systems, we do not want to slow down. We don't want to sit there and go, oh, actually, have you done a risk assessment? Because that's not what we're wired for. How many of you consider yourself an engineer? Or have used that term about yourself? Yeah? I do, occasionally. It's a funny term. It sounds a bit grown up for me, and I think in my head I'm still 17. Engineers are wired for this. We are wired to just get things done and build. But unfortunately, it means that we are kind of part of the problem in all of this. Because we are so frantically building code, so frantically building systems, that we are part of the cause of vulnerabilities, the code we write. Not because we are stupid or malicious. Well, at least one of you will be malicious, but hopefully we'll find them by the end of the day. But because we're distracted. We're focused on our code because this morning your daughter threw her shoes out of the car window on the way to work. That may or may not have happened. My daughter is three and trouble. So I love you all dearly. I love the fact that I do this too. But we are part of the problem. So we kind of have to not see the adversarial, oh, well, I do it fine and it's your fault. It's not how it works. We together, security people, are just as bad as you lot. So everything I say today comes from lessons I've learned the hard way. I don't stand here as a genius who knows everything from Node through to Python through to .NET, and I can weave security through all of it. I learn new languages every day, and I fail at them repeatedly. Now, for most of us, when we develop product, it looks a bit like this. We have an idea. I'm going to do Tinder for French bulldogs, and it's going to be great. And then we develop some code, you know, a little MVP, and we pop it out on the internet, and six people sign up, and then we get a Twitter account, and it's amazing. We get some VC backing, or maybe we don't. And we get a lot of code built and out. And eventually, we grow to a certain size, a certain maturity, and then we go, right, we've hit that point, let's hire a security person. And what we try and do is we try and retrofit security through French bulldog Tinder and wonder why then it's suddenly very, very difficult. The trouble is that we've wasted a long, long time by that point. We've had a lot of exposure. We've written a lot of code. We've got a lot of attack surface, the bits that we're going to throw rocks at and see if it crumbles. And in security, there's a lot of people listening. There's a lot of attackers. And when I say attacker, I don't just mean organized crime and somebody from some shady country that is far enough away from you that feels foreign. I mean anyone who has an objective, an an ego or a motivation that they would want to do something strange to your application. And on the defensive side, you've just said you're going to hire one security person and go, well, now save us, please. What could possibly go wrong? Now, the security industry, I apologize to other security people in the room, we're doing well off this. We're not super, super awesome, like the New Zealand ones particularly, but $79 billion a year. That's phenomenal amounts of money. Because what we do is we sell you a device or a cure-all. So you know those kind of strange films you see of like the 1930s con artists selling you elixirs and tonics that will solve all of your woes? Yeah, welcome to IDS vendors. Welcome to anyone who's selling you blockchain right now. I admit this. I think it's gross. I find the whole thing gross. We're the worst at selling in the security community, I will tell you this. We're a terrible company for this. Because the funny thing is, with all of these devices and things, we get the buzz of feeling like we've done something. We feel like we've got a box, we put it in, it's got security, we turn it on, great, fantastic, and it might even send us emails. Fantastic. But if you've not tuned it, if you're not looking after it, if you're not actively engaging with this as part of your life cycle, it's nothing more than a very pretty piece of Cat 5 cable. And if we're going to spend money on something, let's do some little practical things. In fact, I'd like you to spend no money at all if you don't have to. Now, first things first, I need to recap a few basics because nobody's doing it and it's really very tedious. Please raise your hand if you know what OWASP is. If someone next to you has not raised their hand, please help them in the break and show them. This is not new stuff, it's been going 20 years. OWASP is the Open Web Application Security Project. If you write web applications, this is your source of truth for vulnerabilities. And they charge you nothing. They give their information away. You should follow MVPs like Troy Hunt, who generally is doing the good thing from the Gold Coast. You should go and find his blog and read. You should admit your mistakes. How many of you have really screwed up in the last week? Kind of looked at your work and gone, what on earth have I done? How many of you have told a lie in a meeting in the last month and said, oh yeah, I totally understand that, yep. Yeah, do you know what? All of these kind of habits, this kind of sense of we should sit there and pretend we know what we're doing, that we shouldn't ask for help, we shouldn't ask for an acronym to expand it. We pretend we don't make mistakes and it makes us vulnerable. Because if we pretend, we tend to believe it after a while. It was Vonnegut that said, be careful who you pretend to be because that's who you become. Well, if you pretend to be perfect, well, you'll feel like you've become that, and you're really not. It's our mistakes, all of them, that are going to get us in trouble. So admit you're making it up. If you're sat in a meeting and somebody says auth to you, have you done the auth work? You should absolutely turn around and say, which one do you mean? We chose two words, authentication and authorization, that mean two different things and gave them the same abbreviation. Does nobody else think this is ridiculous? And yet, we smile and politely say, yep. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. You move quickly. How many of you have seen a talk this week so far of a framework you've not used yet? Yeah, you all know the Stack Overflow curve where you see a talk, you get inspired, you try and write some code that's outside of the basic demo, and then you end up on Stack Overflow. How many of you have got code in your stack that you know came from Stack Overflow? Yep, absolutely. How many of you are brave enough to put in the comments next to it where it came from? Yeah, if you're not, do it. There's no shame. Shame is what when we hide things. And if we're shamed by something, then we definitely can't do anything about it. Now, I jokingly said on Twitter there was a password inspection this morning. Now, I will give you a sticker if you give me your password and a smile. We'll probably be friends for life. But how many of you are using password managers? Good. How many of you have helped everyone else around you do it? I think there's some fibbers in this room. I really do. Because the stats we're seeing out there is that passwords, guessing passwords, asking people politely for passwords, is far more effective than it should be right now, and it has been for a long time. How many of you have a password in your life that has a birthday because it's over the age of 5? Yeah? I do. I have one from my university days. I use it for dodgy news groups. But I promise you, most people in your organizations do. Probably one that's 10 years old at this point because passwords have been around that long. Using a password manager, sorting out your password basics is going to save you a lot of time. And you're all sitting there going, but this isn't technical. It's because we need to walk before we run. I'm going to get technical really quickly. If you can't do this, if you can't do basic passwords, Why bother? Attackers are very, very simple if given the chance. They are very lazy. They will take the path of least resistance. And if you leave the front door open, they will walk through. They're not going to do a Hollywood-style heist if they don't need to. So let's talk about protecting our systems. I use dodgy analogies in all of my talks. I sort of apologize for this. First things first. We are living in a world of heterogeneous technology, and that means it's a very fancy, many-syllabled word for saying it's like being a kid in a candy store. There are microservice architectures where it's perfectly acceptable to have six different languages in play. I've had people I've worked with who forked weird little Erlang projects just for one tiny bit of their architecture because it would be fun and because they saw an inspiring talk one time. Now, it's great. If you treat your technologies like a puppy, right? Puppy's awesome. You show all your friends, they're super impressed you have a puppy, you get to play with it, take it on walks, whatever you do with puppies. I'm not good with puppies. That's great. But every piece of security software, every bit of software, in fact, we bring into our lifecycle, libraries, frameworks, every bit of our stack has vulnerabilities in it. Because it was written by humans. In fact, even if you're a big company, you're like, we don't use open source software, it's kind of the equivalent of you being a big fish in the pond. Now, you eat smaller fish. The smaller fish eat smaller fish still. They eat smaller fish, and eventually you get down to teensy tiny bits of software, little open source things, which, for most parts, you could consider to be the poop emoji. So even if you're a big fish and you're really distracted and abstracted away from the technology stack you have hundreds of thousands of tiny software components bringing security flaws into your world. Which means you've got a puppy problem. Because the problem with a puppy is it's great fun, but it's going to poop on your carpet. Now, it's great if you've got one, that's easy to clean up. But if you've got hundreds, nobody's going to want to come play with you anymore. This is not going to be fun for you to manage. So to protect, we have to be very mindful of the technologies we're bringing into our stack. How many of you are Node developers? Oh, good. We can have an intervention with cupcakes and things afterwards. These people are friendly. Now, the reason I bring up Node is because of the dependency management, because of the vulnerabilities in that space, because of how packages work. I would guess a lot of you are .NET developers. This is a Microsoft conference after all. Raise your hand if you've caught .NET and you're sticking with it. Yeah, there we go. You're probably feeling really smug because NuGet's really like fancy looking and they have like really professional looking blog posts and whatnot. Yeah? Vulnerability management, caring for the small security vulnerabilities in all of your stack, affects all of us. We have to find ways to reduce that risk and understand it. See when a problem is coming, not from the code we write, but from the code we use. And obviously, the software you have built has flaws, and other people use yours. It's actually a horrible nested house of cards. If you were to map it out, it's a highly complex nodes and edges graph. I have the data set for 34 languages now in terms of open source vulnerability integrations and transitive dependencies. It's so big that it smashed my little VMs to pieces. I couldn't give it enough memory to visualize the complexity of this space. But most of us don't even have the list of the first tier ones we're using. How many of you have the full list of packages and can remember what libraries you're using every day? Yeah? At least someone's going, it's in my build file, it's fine. That doesn't mean you know what it is. It just means you wrote it once. So we need to kind of pull back a bit. And if we're going to be that kid in the candy store, we have to take a few extra steps. We have to realize that not all technologies are equal. Now, Node, I do pick on Node, and I do apologize a little bit. But there are some beautiful, beautiful dependencies you can install there. There's one that will just do local execution on a box, so it passes straight through to a shell. Now, if you've read the OWASP top 10, that's called operating system level injection. But that's legitimate in Node. Great, wonderful. There's also isArray-ish, which I have no idea what that means. But apparently, you can check if it is almost an array. There we go. This isn't a sign of maturity. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. So please start looking at these. Try and understand what they're doing. Now, I'm going to show you a couple of things to help your world here. This will go terribly wrong because the demo gods invariably are spiteful and mean. Right. Oh, come on. Oop-a-doo. Do, 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 do. Oh, there we go.
Hi, mouse.
All right. Okay, first things first. Now, I promise you, vendor free zone. I'm not trying to sell you anything. I don't write this, I have no commission at all. This is libraries.io. Anyone already using it? No. Libraries.io is written by a lovely gentleman in the UK called Andrew Nesbitt. Now, he started writing it because his physics community had all of these feral dependencies in really crazy languages that you've never, ever used in production, and he wanted to see when there was a new vulnerability with them. So he started collecting data. And he started collecting, and he kept collecting, and he kept collecting, and suddenly he had a lot of vulnerability information sources. In fact, he's tracking at this point 1.8 million different software repository items. And do you know what he gives you for free if you're open source? And for a very small fee, I'm talking like $100, kind of small. He lets you do this. So this is my GitHub account. It's very, very small because I don't have much that's open source. You can sign up with your GitHub account. Takes less than 2 minutes. I'm not going to do this live because the internet in here is kind of, Auckland style. I clicked on SafeStack, so that's my little company. Those are our open source ones, so we have some Slack stuff and Ava, which is a vulnerability scanner we've written. You click on that. As you can see, it's already saying I've got 19 dependencies. Fantastic. I didn't tell it this. I just told it where my GitHub was. It'll tell me, look, all's my stats. And then I can click a button. Fantastic. And do you know what it's going to do? It's going to tell me every time a new version of a piece of software I'm dependent on updates. And it's going to tell me in my inbox. Now, I know you can do this with fancy tools. There are tools that will charge you tens of thousands of dollars a year to do this for you. You put them in your build pipelines. That's great. But if you're an open source project, or if you're at the small end of the scale, you don't have that budget. There's also, the same gentleman has done something you can stick in your build pipeline. So you can stick a dependency checker before your build and deployment. So if there is a security vulnerability in one of these many components, you can stop your build. That's good. Your boss isn't going to like it. They're not going to understand. Not for a minute. But imagine you not having to go and find this information. It's going to come to you. This is the root of security for the amateur superhero. It's finding things that are just free and easy to use and using them. The other part of this, if you don't want to use these ones, I'll show you the OWASP one just very briefly. OWASP has its own dependency checker. It's a mature project, and it will integrate. If you check out the little side there, you can pop this in Ant, you can put this in Maven, you can put it in Jenkins, you can do it with Homebrew. You can put this in your workflow today. Am I saying you're going to have a fun time? No, because it's hard. You have to tune these things and understand them. But I'm saying this isn't going to be something you're going to have to ask budget for. You can just go do it. Now, the best thing about all of these projects that are funded by small organizations and groups is that they have amazing support. The people out there genuinely want to help other people. So please go and check them out. So there are links in the slides. I will share the slides on the Twitters. If you are following them on the Twitters, please do include the underscore. The real lady nerd gets cross when people ask her for links to dependency checkers. Right, so we're going to protect our stack. Next, we're going to do some watching. We need to figure out if and when something is coming for us. Now, not every weapon on the internet is some military-grade nation-state actor who's decided that your particularly tiny feral startup or your little department of a health company is interesting. In fact, for most of us, those big actors don't even know we exist. But there's a whole world of people who do. And there's a whole world of little Perl scripts who are wandering around the internet looking for certain technologies and just having a try. Now, if you're ever interested in seeing how this really works, I suggest start writing the feral Perl scripts. Start trying to find all of the instances who use your tech stack. Look at their headers, look at their technology signatures. I don't want you to feel like the offensive side of this is somehow better. The engineering on the offensive side is not good engineering. They cannot do this well, but they do it enthusiastically. And that's what we need to remember. We can do both sides of this. We have the skills. We have a stronger skill set than we believe. The trick with this kind of watching element is you will not know it's coming if you're not looking. How many of you have logs? Please tell me you have logs. Good, all right, good start. How many of you look at your logs? Mm-hmm. How many of you look at your logs when you're not debugging something? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get a kind of
intentional decrease.
As you go down that. Most of us look at our logs and our monitoring because something else has gone wrong. A customer is shouting at us or something is rendering strange. But we don't look at it day to day because we have more interesting things to do, right? Now, I want to turn this into something that you don't have to actually do every day. I don't want you to have 6 dashboards on your wall. Nobody looks at dashboards. They're like wallpaper. You see it for 2 days and then you go, oh, that's nice, and forget it exists. The trick to this is choosing the right tools for it. Now, you could go and buy a giant security monitoring and management thing. Fair enough. If you've got a team and budget, please go nuts. The vendors will buy you dinner. It will be lovely. You'll have fun. I'm going to show you a few homebrew solutions that we can get the job done. A little bit more engineering, a little bit less cost. Now, before we get going, I want you to challenge a couple of perceptions you might have. Because there's a couple of perceptions about us building these kind of systems that get in the way of actually implementing and put them out into your world. Now, this is a generalization, but this is the perception most people have. So, in terms of how much do we know about security, we look at engineering, or we say colloquially out in the world, we say, well, the engineering team maybe watch Mr. Robot, but largely you're lazy and you don't want to do security. How many of you would resent being called lazy and told you don't want to do security? I'd resent that. It's a horrible thing to say. And at the same time, we always assume the security team has budget and that they have lots of staff and have done all of this before. In fact, there was a lovely quote from Wendy Nather recently, and she said, the one big mistake we're making in security is we're assuming that behind all of the curtains sits an entire little army of security people waiting to fight the battle for us, when in fact behind it is a small person trying to look big with a little machine. The reality is the security people are desperately trying to keep up with the technology change that's happening in engineering. Because your frameworks, your libraries are moving quickly. Your techniques have changed dramatically in 5 years. How many of you have gone microservices? There's normally a couple. How many of you are going serverless this year, at least for one component of your architecture? Threat modeling a serverless architecture is really different. But our security teams don't come to your talks. They don't understand what is happening there a lot of the time. The funny thing is, the security people assume you don't know what you're doing, but you have better logging and monitoring tools than most other teams in the organization. You know how an application should behave. You know what it looks like when it goes wrong. You have access to systems they don't even know exist. So what we need to do is apply your engineering know-how to their problem space. So let's figure out how we're going to log all of the things, because we're good at some logs. We're good at application logs and debugging. Great, fantastic. Those of you who are running with Windows-type backends, you've probably got event logs and whatnot somewhere in there. But we need to log everything. Our application stuff, that's easy, we control it. Our database. We need to log operating system stuff, border devices, cloud tools. How many of you use cloud tools as part of your development lifecycle? Yeah, I do. Lots of us do. Software as a service is a big deal. You don't want to have to own something and care and water it for the rest of forever. So we buy cloud versions. But there's no monitoring there. They tend to be just separate from us. And I want to show you how we can actually bridge some of these gaps now. Now, the important bit with all of the tools and setting up your monitoring is you're not going to be able to do all of them. You're going to have to prioritize. That means knowing which tool is actually going to cause you the most damage. Right, I'm going to give you a few examples, and we'll see which one you think is most scary if it was compromised. So, how many of you would be scared if your source code was suddenly public that that was compromised? What about your password manager? What about your AWS account? Sorry, I said AWS in an Azure thing. Oh, and I'm going to do a demo with AWS as well, sorry, kind of. We all have to look at our tool chain, regardless of what tools you are using, and understand which one is the scariest. And then we start with that one, and we move down the list in priority order. I don't really care what your Trello boards say. I'm going to square it with you. Your Trello board is a feral wasteland of information. I'm probably not going to get a lot out of it unless you're using that as your password manager. So we're going to watch logs for real every day, and we're going to get it to tell us when we need to care, and I'm going to show you that. Now, the trick to this is never build it yourself. I'm incredibly lazy. You should be lazy too. Laziness is the way forward. So I'm going to give you open source code today, really terrible Python, and you should say thank you, and then politely fork it and do a better job than I did. Now, please help me in my traditional prayer to the demo gods. We're about to try and have a look at least some code. We probably won't end up doing the live demo part of it. But I want to show you how simple it is to do one job in particular. We're going to look at that cloud piece. So this is all homebrew. There is no vendor solution here. We are connecting from LastPass. We are going to take the logs of LastPass because there's a few things I really want to know. So I want to know if somebody has failed to log in many, many times on my LastPass account, that's a bad thing. That means they're trying to guess my password. I also want to know if my LastPass has suddenly been logged in from another country, because that's not likely to be me. So I want to know those two things. So I'm going to query the logs for those, and I'm going to get alerts to tell me somewhere that it matters. I'm going to use Lambda for that. Now all other serverless technologies exist. Please save your... I don't want to know. Just don't. Lambda is pain enough for me. I don't need another one. We are going to send some stuff to S3 because we want our logs to be in an immutable, safe state even when we're not doing the active monitoring of them. I want to be able to come back to them later because often the time between a compromise and me figuring it out, and I say me, I mean we, is 18 months. So I'm going to need to keep these logs for a long, long time. How many of you have 18 months of visibility in your logs? I'm going to say you probably don't with all of them. Many, many default Windows configurations out there, Windows Server, IIS, that are keeping their logs for 20 megs worth of log. That is about 16 minutes on a production server. So we're going to send some stuff to S3, and then we're going to send it on to Sumo Logic. Again, other logging aggregation tools vary, but that one has a free tier. You send a gig a day and it's free. Fantastic, great. So, first things first. I want to talk what this will look like at the end. I'm going to show you the code, but I'm going to show you what it looks like for us in reality. These are actual screenshots from our Slack. This is our red alert channel. When I'm saying we monitor things, we want one place that is going to tell us when there's something that we care about. So, for example, that's someone logging into my backups. And then somebody going, oh, yeah, kind of, that was me. If you don't have that kind of transparency and sharing on your logs, you can't share and see them in one central place, then we have a problem. So the code I'm going to show you gets you to this. How many of you use Slack or HipChat or a similar chat ops kind of program? Yeah? If you don't, if you're still in IRC or Yammer, you can improvise similar things. Don't keep your logs to yourself. Get many eyes on them. This is actually another one of our bots. So this is Dark Knight. I'll show you the code to that in just a second, too. We want transparency. We want collaboration in this. So let's have a look at that code. Oh, come on. One day, I will have a beautiful assistant up here, and he will change the windows for me. There we go. Hello. All right. So there's like this unspoken rule with presentations, right, that you kind of expect me to at least once just go and type a demo on the screen. I hate that rule. I really do. I despise it, so I'm not going to do it. I'm going to show you code I presented earlier. So this is it. Now, this is obviously me seeing it in Atom. It's ugly Python 2.7, but you could have written this in Node or in Java if you're really into Java. Because Lambda has several languages available. Now, let me talk you through what it's doing. So we give it an API endpoint. This is all documented on their page. You have an API key and a client ID. That doesn't cost you money. You just press a button. It gives you one. Now, don't put this in your GitHub. That's just for the record. Really bad idea. We are going to pull the logs every 15 minutes because we don't want this instant. This is going to be a lot of data. So you have to tune this bit of it. We're going to make an API call with some very, very ugly JSON. How many of you made JSON API calls that are very ugly? Yeah, good. This is how the world works now. Good. Following along. We make a JSON request. Awesome. Whew, this is like the least exciting demo ever, right? Yep. We upload it to S3. It's like two whole lines. My geek creds are just disintegrating. It's like this is not hard or something. In fact, it all comes down to two lines. Two lines at the bottom. Make a blooming job, make a request, an API request. Shoot it to S3. Sumo Logic and S3 play nicely together. It watches, and suddenly, alerts pop up in our Slack channel. How many of you feel like that's something you could achieve in an afternoon? It is. It really is. Now, this is available. You can go to GitHub. Last past Lambda Logs. Now, I give it out, but with the challenge to you. Go on, you can do it. I give it out with the knowledge that you can make this better than I can, because I'm a security person, which means I'm a really feral kind of coder. I write really dirty ops code. You could probably do this much better. You could do it for GitHub. Spot how many people are deleting things from your repos or doing scary things. You could find it and find the events for other tools out there. Your build servers, who's logging into Bamboo, what are they doing when they're there? And if you do write it, I do encourage you to share it, because we get into trouble when all of our code is closed source for security things. We can't get another set of eyes over it. Now, I mentioned very briefly Dark Knight, this one. Now, this is another example of something you can do at home. How many of your companies have multiple domains out there on the internet? Yeah? We own at least 10, because I, you know, get a bit bored in the evening and just buy them. Now, one of the best ways to attack your organization is to buy domains that look like yours, stand up a mail server, and send you social engineering attacks. End-to-end, in terms of setup time and cost, it's 30 minutes and it's free to send those kind of attacks. It's all well-scripted. Dark Knight generates all of the permutations of all my domain names, and it tells me which one of it has now been registered, and it tells me when they change location in the world, because I want to know that. It also tells me when there's a new MX record. That's good. I want to know about that. I might not be able to stop it. Watching isn't about being able to stop it, but I can respond, and response is crucial. Now, other people's APIs do make kittens cry. They will change rapidly, without warning. They're not going to tell you, because they don't care. You're not their primary use case. But please do try using them. Please remember that when you're doing this, there is complexity and fragility in homebrew systems. So some of the thing you pay for when someone else does it for you is that they have to care when it breaks. So if you do have to write your own, give it a bit of extra time and love to make sure that it's sustainable. Learning from the hard way, custom filter languages used in most log and monitoring tools are horrible feral wastelands, and I can't stand them. Now, I'm going to show you this. Anyone who's an ex-Java developer or current, what they've tried to do is it's kind of Java regex, but without the powerful stuff and with way more pipe symbols. So this is the actual query filter language for Sumo Logic. It's vaguely as bad in each of them. So if you're looking at that going, that's disgusting, you should be. This is what you're going to need to wrangle to get it out and into your alerts. So please be warned, I'm not going to say that bit is peachy quite yet. But share it. If you share it and other people share theirs, then we can set up much quicker. So if we can't stop it, at least we can see it coming. Now, here's some links. Again, the things will be available. I've also put two other log and monitoring tools that you can install on your network on these slides. Now, those are very big and complex, and you wouldn't see anything in a demo. But Elk is the Elasticsearch and Kibana homebrew security events monitoring system, and SeamMonster is a VM version of that that's way, way easier to use. So please do go knock yourself out. If you really like Docker, Elk Docker will get you going. So we've got to respond. We've watched our things. We know it's going to go wrong, and it has gone wrong. We've got to do something with it. How many of you think you're excellent in the case of an emergency? How many of you are like the trusted person in your organization? Nobody? Oh, I feel kind of sad. Like, the gentleman at the back's rocking it. He's like, yeah, I am. I'm good. Incident response is really hard, regardless of whether it's security or whether it's more technical things like scaling problems, or, you know, you've lost a server somewhere because AWS is having a bad day. We have to learn how to do this before there's actually an event, before there's an incident. Now, the kinds of incidents I'm talking about are somebody emailing you, dear sir or madam, I found your application on the internet and I may have found the copy of your database. We should talk. Love and kisses, hacker. How many of you have had that kind of email? They probably had less love and kisses, to be fair. I like to pretend they're going to be that nice. You have to respond to people looking like they're brute forcing your app, trying to break into accounts. You have to respond to people reporting that something strange is happening. And you're not going to be able to do this innately. Your stress reactions are going to be bad. Your preparedness, your ability to find the information is going to be slower. In fact, most of the time, it's going to be a real, real mess, at least the first few times. How many of you have a security incident response plan, or a plan to you'll know what to do if somebody discloses a vulnerability? How many of you like ISO standards? No, just me. Okay. Right, ISO standard homework. Did you know you can get a free of charge, like the only security free of charge ISO standard is vulnerability disclosure? And it's 6 pages, and it will tell you exactly what you need to do. I think it's 147. ISO 29417, sounds about right. Google it, and if you can't find it, come find me. You have to have a plan, because otherwise it's like this. Now, as well as having a plan, you need to accept that you need to question and judge every bit of your equipment that you think is trying to save you. Now, this is Tavis. Tavis has many bored periods. He works for Google, and when he gets bored, he does bad things to software. And that's okay, we love him dearly. This was when he had a particular problem with Symantec. Now, Symantec and other security vendors, they are not alone in this. They are building code just as you are building code. It means they're not immune from having the same problems. So when we're responding, we may not just be responding to things that we have built. It could actually even be our security tools. I mean, if you look at those tweets, that's pretty terrifying. We've got security devices with really scary flaws. How many of you use Fitbits? Stealthy tracking device of choice for many nation states. It's adorable. It's great. Google Apps API has got some really wonderful creepy features for you tracking what you're doing with those. Now, he, at the same time, literally in the same period as finding all of these problems with Symantec, decided to find a remote code execution in a Fitbit scale. So you can compromise your house from your scales. That's kind of sad, right? We've also had vulnerabilities in socks. In the last week, we had a distributed denial of service that turned out to mostly be webcams and kettles. We're not just going to maybe theoretically respond to something. Something is coming for us, and it's probably a household object. Now, here's some things to get you prepared for responding. Responding actually is a big talk. You could come and spend 3 hours with me and go through scenarios. It's kind of like D&D, but with less fun. But here's some things you should go and do. So there's an ISO standard for responsible disclosure. Go learn what to do, how to calmly approach it if somebody tells you they've hacked your stuff. Go and have a look at stuff like the Simian Army. You've heard about Chaos Monkey before from Netflix. If you haven't, go have a look. It's a lot of fun. Go look at HackerOne and BugCrowd, how they deal with incidents and response. And then I want you to sit, not just with you technical people, but I want you to invite the marketing people, the lawyers, and the C-levels, and I want you to sit in a room together and safely practice this. Because until you've practiced going through an incident and how you would respond, you have no idea how complicated it can be. Your C-levels are going to have to write emails that say, "I'm sorry, we don't know what happened. I'm sorry, we lost your data." And that scares people. And when people are scared, they react badly. So you need to prepare. Your job as your amateur superhero is to keep other people calm in time of crisis and guide them through it, not to be the cause of stress. And then we need to learn from it. Learning is actually the most important part of this talk. Even if you're sitting there going, "Yeah, I'm totally onto the security thing and I'm going to do all of the things," you're feeling really enthusiastic right now and you've got a list of things you're going to go back to your organizations and do. It very, very, very quickly gets depressing. Because for everything you find, it opens up into a little rabbit hole of more things you will find. The vulnerabilities tend to kind of multiply. And you'll start tracking them on your Jira boards or however you track issues in your organization, and you'll see how many start building up. You'll start realizing that your responses and your approaches to this didn't work. They didn't work the first time, or they made things painful. Or maybe they told you false things and you had to spend a lot of time investigating. And your enthusiasm starts to curve down again. That's predictable. It happens for all of us. Now, what I recommend you do is don't try and tackle this all at once. There is zero thing. There is no thing as 100% secure. It doesn't exist. All there is a little bit more secure than yesterday. Taking little tiny steps one at a time and figuring out and learning quickly when it goes wrong. You do not want to be the voice of doom in your organization. If you are the person that says, "Yeah, but we have 900 million tickets for security, we're clearly screwed," you're not exactly going to sit in that job long. They're not going to come to you. They're not going to trust you. We all suck at this every day. The number of times I have blasted my Slack channel with so many alerts because I was a little bit too enthusiastic with a new tool, that I get banned from GitHub access for this stuff. The number of times that in an incident we've relied on a backup source being there, and actually when we started digging in, we realized it wasn't a complete backup, or that backup was stored somewhere strange. Or how many of you store your backups in the same account that you're already on? If you do, you don't need to raise your hand. I know that's kind of a scary thing to admit, but please go change that. Because you know what I'm going to do as an attacker, what the attacker's going to do? Just for giggles, because we're kind of sadistic, we're going to delete your backups. It's number two on our list. Because why not? You're not going to stop us. Why won't we do it? We're going to suck at this and own your mistakes. I lost $3,400 4 years ago now to an AWS key on an open source project. Now, what was beautiful about it is I learned lots of lessons. I learned that there are scripts out there that automatically mine AWS keys. Fantastic. That's an interesting rabbit hole to go down. I learned how to deal with AWS customer support in time of a crisis. I learned that you can get the money back eventually, which was awesome. I learned that I suddenly was a Bitcoin miner and fairly prolific in Sao Paulo. So that was exciting. But if I sat and I was there as a security person and said, oh, well, actually, I'm perfect and you should feel bad, you don't connect with that. I share my mistakes because my mistakes are lessons you don't have to learn. I share my mistakes because I'm the type of person who goes, I'm going to give this a play. I'm going to see what we can do. And I'm going to fail, and it's going to be okay, because I'm going to be stronger at the end of it. There was an interesting video by Josh Robb from PushPay a little while ago about the blameless culture that they have at PushPay. Now, this follows on from some really big work at Etsy about blamelessness in software engineering. So if you haven't gotten into this and read about it, I do recommend you go and read about that. But I really want to see the start of a blameless security culture. It's very, very easy right now for us to say, this is your fault, you should feel bad, or get out of my office, you're fired. We don't want to be in a position where we are looking at people as the cause of problems rather than trying to figure out the circumstances that led to those decisions. Now, that's hard. We do blame very quickly in security because it scares us. And whenever we're scared, we blame things. It's easier, make it someone else's problem. In your organization, I want you doing postmortems for security events, and I want you sharing them. If you've not seen the results of a penetration test for your organization, go ask someone to look at it. This should not be secret. They've employed you. They trust you. You should be sharing and not blaming. Do you know that 40% of all of the vulnerabilities I ever found as a pen tester, and I did that for 7 years, I could attribute back to the original founders of the company? I never told them that, because you don't want to say, hey, your boss was a bit of an idiot and didn't write good code. That wouldn't have been constructive. The constructive lesson is that we all share this code base, regardless of who wrote it. And so we all have to share the responsibility for securing it. There were tons and tons of little things you could do out of this talk. And there's hours worth of more that if you come and, you know, ask me for a sticker and come and pick my brain, I can throw these things at you. I'm not protective about the knowledge in my head. It's mine to share with the world. I want you to start accepting that you are flawed, and we are all flawed, and we are in this together. I want you to protect what you have, watch for trouble, and learn how to respond. And most importantly, I want you to share when it goes well as when it fails. Now, what time are we on? Oh, we've done all right. We have 10 minutes of questions. Does anyone have a question? This is the one and only wonderful time where you can exchange a question for an incredibly rare sticker. No? Oh, bless you. Well, you're free to go about your lives. Make good choices. I will be loitering around. If you want to bring your security problems and you're not too keen about doing it in a public place, you'll know where to find me. I'll be outside. Thank you very much.